Thank you for your interest in teaching for Guitar Lessons Ithaca. We hope it works out great for you and us and the students, of course. And we want to give you a little bit of philosophical background that may help you get started. So several years ago, I joined an international teachers group, and I was in that group for about 5 years, and it was great. It was wonderful. I learned so much stuff, and I completely changed how I do things. And I would distill the main things I learned into three categories. The geometric method, groups, and training. And I'm going to go through each one of those. Plus, I'm going to also talk about layering and fun. So those are your five topics that you're about to hear. The geometric approach comes from all the latest research in modern study of how to learn. And there's a great book called Make It Stick that I summarized, and I'd highly recommend you ask me for that to listen to. It'll help you in whatever you're learning for the rest of your life. And some of the things it says, I'm just going to be short. It says cramming is the worst way to study, because you're focused for a long period of time on one topic. It's actually much better to do spaced practicing, which means it's over time. Let's say you're doing several different subjects, which in this school we do like three per quarter. Some students can do more than that, but most of the time it's three. So let's call it subject A, B, and C. When you do A and then move to B and then move to C, when you move back to A, it forces your brain to reset, and then you're better able to gauge how much you really remember about that topic. Whereas when you do, quote, massed studying or massed practicing, where it's a big chunk all in a row, you don't get that perspective. You're thinking, oh, I got this. Reading the textbook multiple times for a subject is the worst way to study, because you get lulled into thinking you really know a subject because you're recognizing the same words in the same order. Whereas the best students, they'll read the textbook, but they'll also make cue cards, they'll interact with other students, they'll test themselves in all different ways, and then they really get an understanding from multiple angles. So that's part of this too, what the geometric method is. I mean, from what I'm told, like the classical method, the age-old classical music learning method, was very linear, where you don't get piece number two till you master piece number one. Because, you know, why should I give you piece number two, which is a little harder than piece number one, when you can't even play piece number one? Which makes sense, but it's not as fast. And so there's a potential for the geometric method, at least the way I do it, to look a little bit all over the place. But it's on purpose. And it also allows for some flexibility. Like, music is not a linear subject. Like, you can't compartmentalize as neatly as perhaps other subjects, because everything is interrelated. I mean, we all know rhythm is interrelated to melody, is interrelated to harmony, etc., etc. But that's the geometric method in a nutshell. Second big thing I got from the International Teachers Group is groups, teaching in groups. Now, I don't advertise on the website that Guitar Lessons Ithaca is group classes, because people would get the wrong idea, and I think I would have gotten the wrong idea before I understood how to teach in groups. I would have thought that, you know, with somebody at the blackboard teaching everybody the same way, like all beginners, and maybe some intermediate people would be bored out of their minds or something. And so the groups is really, I think, most students' favorite part of the lessons, because when it's not always groups, because they sign up for a class and it's like an open gym format where they can't control whether anyone else is going to come to that class or not. But when people come and they're the only one, and that happens like two or three times in a row, they may be like, well, where is everybody? You know, I want to play with other people. I've even had people say, well, I see that no one else has signed up for this particular class that I'm signed up for, so I'm going to bail on that class and do another class later in the week where other people are signed up. Like it's that strong. And yes, there is a small percentage of prospective students who come for the free trial and they hear that it's groups and they say, no thanks, I don't want to do that. And there is another small percentage who try the lessons and they say, nope, I just don't like the group format. And in my experience, those are the students who don't have a clear idea of what they want. They just want attention. Like if people have a clear idea of what they want, I give them specific instruction. We give them specific instructions on how to get there. But generally, I find the small percentage of people who complain about groups are not very motivated to practice, and they don't have a clear idea of what they want, so they're just going to use that as an excuse. But in any case, I probably don't have to tell you the benefits of group classes, but this is what I tell and show the prospective students, that it's the benefits of group classes is, one, a varied learning environment. It's different every week. It's not just me and the student or you and the student. And that is definitely adds to the fun part of it, which we'll get to at the end. Varied learning environment. Opportunity to learn from each other. So the learning from each other is a big part, because they hear what's possible. When they hear me, the teacher, or you, the teacher, demonstrate something, they think, well, of course you can do that. You've been playing for, you know, in my case, I've been playing for 40 years. So they're going to think, well, of course you could do that, but I don't know if I could do that. Whereas the person sitting next to them does it, then they're like, oh, well, if that person's the same age or younger or whatever it is, and they're like, well, if that person can do it, I can do it. You know, and then sometimes it goes even more than that. Like, I might ask the student who can already do such a thing to explain to the student who can't yet how they did it. And sometimes they offer insights that I wouldn't have thought to tell them. In other cases, I'll ask more advanced students to explain something to a not as advanced student, just so that I can hear how well they understand the topic and fill in the gaps for them. So it's learning overall. Like, all in that case, all three people are learning. The student who already can do it is learning because they may hear certain things from me about gaps of the way they explained it to solidify their understanding. The student who can't do it benefits from hearing a different perspective other than their teacher. And then I learn because they may say things in a way that I didn't think of, or bring up certain things that I didn't think of. So it's a win-win for everyone. So that's opportunity to learn from peers. Next one, removes fear of playing in front of an audience. That's a big one. People who only do private lessons, they don't know what they don't know. You know, and like that leads to the next one, improving their sense of rhythm. Like, the teacher can, I've had students come to me who they can't play in time. They've been studying for another teacher for a year and they can't play in time. This is just so sad, you know, and the teacher just keeps pushing them along. Like, maybe they're doing a method book or whatever, and the teacher just keeps pushing them along. They're not going to ever get the opportunity to even realize that they can't play in time. And let me go back to the fear of playing in front of an audience. Yes, they're going to be nervous their first time doing a group class, but within the first 5 minutes, hopefully they're going to see, like, oh, everyone's on the same page. And I recommend for you who are listening to the teacher, I recommend you watch the videos that the students made about why the group classes is so strong and so popular. It's at guitarlessonsithaca.com/groupclasstestimonials. That's guitarlessonsithaca.com/groupclasstestimonials. And I'm going to continue with the list. There's accountability, meaning, like, if you say, you know, in front of a group, you're going to learn X, Y, and Z for next time, then, you know, it's more than just the teacher to whom you feel accountable, and you're going to be more motivated to learn that thing. Next one is fosters independent thinking. One of the biggest objections to group classes is, well, I only get a portion of the teacher's attention, and therefore it's a big disadvantage. That's a myth, because the group classes, it fosters independent thinking. When you wrestle with a question, I'm sure this has happened to you, when you wrestle with a certain question and try different possibilities for the answer, and then you finally get the teacher and you ask them a question, you ask them the question and they explain it to you, it's going to sink in a lot more, a lot faster and a lot deeper than if they just told you off the cuff. You know, wrestling with a question or trying to figure it out is a very valuable experience. And so the group classes fosters independent thinking. And, you know, when you just have the luxury of, and this is the other thing too, like when you have the luxury of a one-on-one lesson, the student can ask any question and derail the class because there's no one else getting inconvenienced by that if the teacher allows that. And I've done that. Like, I still take lessons. I've been with my teacher 2.5 years. I take lessons from a drummer at the time of this recording. And I'm not learning drums, but he's helped me expand my rhythmic vocabulary, and it's been so much fun. And there are times where, like, if I haven't practiced, I'll just think of questions to ask, and we'll just chat the whole time. And it's, like, a little manipulative on my part. Yes, I'm interested in that, but if we do that too often, the lessons are unfocused and not very productive. You know, so in a group class, you're held to the subject. Like, you can't, if a student asks a question that's unrelated to what the group is doing, you just simply don't have time. You say, I can't do that. I'll be happy to answer that question next week or by email or whatever. Or at the end of the class, if you can ask it succinctly and I can answer it succinctly. So this is all under fosters independent thinking. Next, flexibility within the monthly schedule. This is a huge thing. The convenience of being able to schedule a lesson whenever the student wants. So they sign up for, let's say, the basic program is 5 lessons a month. It's 5 lessons a month because there's 4.3 weeks in a month on average. So rather than round down, I round it up. So they can take any 5 lessons within the month. And so that's why the schedule is completely flexible. If it was private lessons, there'd be no way you could allow that kind of scheduling. So some people like do 2 or 3 in a row all in one day. You know, there's one guy who like, I don't know why he does this, but he always waits till the end of the month. He takes 3 lessons on one day and 2 lessons the next day, the last 2 days of the month. And just, I don't know, that's the way he likes it. He's been doing that for like a year. I don't recommend that, but having that kind of flexibility is a huge advantage. Next, opportunity for immediate implementation. This is also a ginormous one. We're going to talk about training and implementation in a little while, but I'll keep it short on this one. It means that whatever they learn, they can immediately put it into like an actual song or an actual live musical context where they're playing music with other people. That goes a long way. Next, the direction for new content is constantly sharpened. What that means is by comparing and contrasting what they're hearing from other students, it helps the student in question hone where they want to go and what they want to do. Like they may look at someone else and be like, yeah, I want to be able to do like that. Or I definitely don't want to sound like that. Or I'm not interested in that style. I'm not interested in that style. I'm interested in this style. They may get to play lots of different styles, which is another advantage, but it'll help them hone what they want to be able to do. Next one is networking. You know, they get to meet other people and potentially jam with them. I have had other students like form bands with each other. And I have 2 former students who are still in a band, and they're rocking it. Next is knowledge of other styles. I mentioned that already. You get to play lots of different styles. And it's more economical, meaning it's actually cheaper. It's actually cheaper for them than to do private lessons, because when the teacher's time is unleveraged, we would have to charge a lot more for some, which we don't even offer that. We don't offer private lessons just because they're not worth it for the student, and we would have to charge way more than we charge for group classes, and so it would be even less worth it for the student because the money to value ratio just went even further down because we're charging more. So those are the advantages of group classes. So far we've covered the geometric method and the group classes. I'm also going to talk about training, layering, and fun. Right? Training means implementation and integration. Those words they're big words, but all it means is implementation means you use what you just learned, put it in an actual musical context. Even when it's a one-on-one, we do this. You know, there's no point in learning something and then just like saying, oh yeah, I understand that, and then I think I know it. Music doesn't work like that, as you know. Your brain has to know it, and your hands have to know it, and your ears have to know it. And in some cases, your eyes have to know it if you're reading. So putting it into a live musical context is a big part of what we do. That's implementation. And then integration is, how do you how do you take the thing you just learned and put it together with all the other things you learned? You know, I guess I could give an example. Let's say you're learning vibrato, right? So now you know this vibrato technique, but if you can only do it in isolation, not within the context of an actual musical phrase or phrases or a whole solo, then it's kind of useless. So that's just, that's a crude, simple example, but that's integration. Or what about this? Integrating vibrato with hammer-ons and pull-offs. Now you can play, or bends. So now you can play a bend and vibrato at the same time. That's an example of integration. And so training is less talk from the teacher and more doing from the student. So one third of all the classes that we run are training classes where it's understood that the teacher is not meant to teach something new. It's like supervised practicing. You walk around the room, you'd be like, well, try it like this, try it like that, try it, you know, try it backwards, try it forwards, try it slow, try it fast, try it in this key, try it in that position, try it whatever, with green eggs and ham, whatever it is. And that's training, and that's one third of all the classes. And I always tell people in the beginning, people always ask me, what kind of class should I start sign up for? I don't want to be the beginner who holds everybody up. No, it's not like that at all. And, you know, the group classes are designed so that the beginners never feel like that and the advanced people are never bored. But we'll talk more about that in the layering section. So that's training for you. And the training is on a specific topic where everyone can, that's applicable to everyone in the class. And then we'll show you how to layer it. So layering, let's move on to layering. There's a lot of layers. I mean, there's a lot of reading you can do that I can give you as far as layers go, but I'm going to just summarize. You have a specific class. You have an overall class type, which is a general class, a specialized class, or a training class. The general classes are like picking, strumming, technique, you know, playing song, chord vocabulary. Like, I think of it as like overall harmony, melody, and rhythm and technique. One of those in a general class. So yeah, and then a specialized class could be like improvisation or reading or a jazz class or applied music theory class or songwriting class or fingerstyle. Those are some of the examples of specialized classes where it's a specific aspect of guitar. And then the training classes are training classes. So when doing the layering, you have to consider the overall type of class. So let's say in this case we have three students and it's a general class. So, and the students are beginner, intermediate, and advanced. So I'm going to try and explain what layering is. It's a general class. So now I have to decide what am I going to do? Am I going to do harmony, melody, rhythm, or technique? And I might look at who's coming to the class and think about their goals, which I constantly consult their goals. I have everyone's goals written out. They write out their goals every 90 days. So I look at who's coming and I say, or perhaps sometimes certain students are coming for multiple hours. And then I think, well, it'd be better to do like a soloing class for the second hour of student A because he's going to be with student B in that hour who also is working on that and blah, blah, blah. So sometimes you get to know the students a little bit. And so sometimes I do it that way. But other times I just do it as what I think everyone needs in general. Like everyone can improve their strumming. So let's say, for example, I pick strumming. So it's a general class. I pick strumming. And the beginner only knows like G, C, D, A minor, and E minor, let's say. Right? And the other two know lots of chord vocabulary. But in this particular case, the chord vocabulary is not the focus, it's the actual rhythm, the strumming. So when possible, I like them to all play together. So if it could work out where the beginner is playing something slow, like just a basic strum, like 1, 2 and 4 and 1, 2 and like, to just for them to get used to that and switch chords in time could be a very valuable lesson for them. And then the intermediate person gets a more complicated strum. Let's say their strum is over two bars. They have to write out a strum that they came up with on paper, or you write it out on paper and they have to figure out what it is. Let's say you give them a strum that goes one, two, and two, and three, and four. One, two, and two, and three, and four. Like, that's going to take them a while to get, especially if the chords change in the middle of that. Like, if it's one bar per chord, then they might have to go, like, let's say the chords are G and C, so they'd have to go G to N and C and 2 and 3 and 4. The C would come in on the end of 4, because there is no one beat, right? So that could be very challenging to them. And so now the two of them are playing together, and they're both very happy. And then what could we do with the advanced student? Well, that's kind of easy. We just give them 16ths. So the tempo is so slow. So the tempo is 2, 3. So now the advanced person has to go like 1E, or let's give. I'm just thinking of this off the top of my head, like 1E, 1E, E and a, like 1E, E and a 3, 4E and a, you know, something like that. Or 1E, or how about let's leave the 1 out. Let's make it even harder for the advanced student. 2, 3, 4, E, E and a 3, 4E and a, E and a 3, 4E and a. So you'd write that out on paper and make them figure it out. And so now everyone's having a great time playing together. But if it's too burdensome on you to have everybody play together, or it's just not going to work in terms of that, like, for whatever reason, if it's just not working in the live class, or if it's just too stressful for you to try and make everybody play together, then you don't. You just give them their thing and you go around the room and make sure everybody's doing what they're supposed to do. That's layering in a nutshell. You know, everyone's got their different layer, and this is the other thing. If you design it properly, you can immediately layer down or layer up if someone is either struggling or they're nailing it. If someone's nailing it, then fine, give them a slightly higher layer to do. And if someone's struggling, fine, just give them a lower layer to do. Like, if that beginner student was struggling with 1, 2, and 4, then just have them go 1, 2, and. Or 1, 2, and 4. 1, 2, and 4. Or 1, 2, and 3, 4, and 1, 2. Or 1, 2, 3, 4. Like, whatever their layer is, that last one would be like kind of the lowest layer, or I suppose they could just play just on beat 1. That's it. And then they have plenty of time to change. So you can always go up or down in the layers. It's not hard. You just got to get used to it. And then the last but not least is fun. Fun is, we all talk about how the lesson should be fun, but, you know, is it really easy to do when you're trying to get them to make progress? Yes, it can be easy. And when you get used to you having fun, they're going to have fun. So, like, never design a lesson that's like a struggle for you, because they are not going to have fun. You should be having fun. It should be a topic that excites you and motivates you, and you know they need. And you have some creative slant or a way to teach them that's exciting you in some way. And they have fun. And if playing together, playing with each other the same song is fun for them, then do it. And if playing separately is more fun, then do it. Sometimes if they're playing separately the whole hour, I'll do show and tell at the end, just so that everyone can kind of show off what they've learned and play, you know, some lick or some strum or some whatever they learned, chord, new chord vocabulary, whatever they're doing for everyone else at the end. So that's just the thing. But fun is a huge thing, and it's largely overlooked. You know, I was not a teacher who was fun. I was a teacher who was like very nose to the grindstone before I joined this group. And so it may come natural to some of you, and it may not come natural. Like, it did not, it had to be learned and practiced for me. You know, I was very serious and nose to the grindstone type of teacher, because that's the way I am in my own practice routine. But it's funny, like, now I think I allow for more fun in my own practice routine, because I see how much faster everyone learns when they're having fun. Oh, that's what I would start with. Like, you've ever heard the Stephen Covey 7 Habits of Effective People? I can't remember exactly what the title is called, but begin with the end in mind is one of them. So begin with the fun in mind. So when you're planning a class, the first thing I always ask is, well, what would be super cool and fun and valuable? You know, so the fun is right up there in the planning. If it doesn't sound fun, I don't do it. There have been times where I, like, think that it's such and such a topic is going to be so productive and so valuable for them, but I forget about the fun part, and then guess what? It all crumbles apart. So it's a necessary ingredient. So that's it for now. That was 25 minutes of me going on about it, but these five things are like the biggest five things you need to know: the geometric approach, the group class philosophy, the training, and then how to do layering and how to have fun.